in practicing with the paramitas. The six paramitas are, by now, you all should know, generosity, morality,
patience.
Thank you. Energy, meditation, and the topic for today is prajna, or wisdom. So thank you. We have this exercise in my sangha that I lead in Sunnyvale, and I'm always testing them to see if they remember the five hindrances. So I start out, and then I wait, see who shows up with the rest of the list. It's about a 15-year practice. We're just doing good. You're doing good here again. This list down. So the paramitas. Paramita means gone to the other shore, transcended, ordinary lives. Important to keep in mind that the paramitas are not only techniques or methods, but really a fundamental dimension of our practice in the path towards enlightenment. And the question keeps coming up, what are we perfecting? So the talks this week and today are really around character development. So with the paramitas, along with compassion and wisdom, we have the enlightened character. So maybe Mike can tell us where, you know, if this was Coben's teaching, Cliff and I had asked, Cliff about it. These are Milarepa's song, Six Perfections. Mm-hmm. And I thought they're really very appropriate summary of the ones that we've been covering. They're very succinct compared to my wordiness of days of talking. But okay, so here we go. For generosity, nothing to do other than stop fixating on self. For morality, nothing to do other than stop being dishonest. For patience, nothing to do other than not fear what is ultimately true. For effort, nothing to do other than practice continuously. For meditative stability, nothing to do other than rest in presence. For wisdom, nothing to do other than know directly how things are. Milarepa. So the perfection of wisdom. Wisdom is the heart of Mahayana Buddhism. In fact, there's a collection or a basket of teachings called the Perfection of Wisdom Sutras. And I think they have multiple sutras within it, but they go from 8,000 lines to 100,000 lines, and the focus is really wisdom. Wisdom is the mother of all Buddhas because it gives birth to enlightenment. It's wisdom that nourishes one and sustains the bodhisattvas on their path and doing the work that they do in the world. Wisdom is different than the other five paramitas because wisdom is what brings the other five paramitas to fruition in a perfected state. So normally we could be practicing generosity or morality in the everyday, ordinary sense. But when you infuse wisdom into generosity or morality or tolerance, then you have begun the process of moving it into a more enlightened or perfected state. The Heart Sutra is, of course, the Heart of Great Perfect Wisdom Sutra. And what we're asked to experience in the Heart Sutra is really to acknowledge and actually experience that all five aggregates or skandhas are empty. So wisdom is about emptiness, shunyata. So more on what the term emptiness means. It means that all things are empty in terms of their lack of own being. Own being a technical term that applies for the quality of being that's self-generated or self-possessed or, as stated in the Samdhanirmocana Sutra, self-produced. The Chinese translation for Sabhava means self-nature, the immortal self or immutable nature of a thing. Things in possession of their own being would be things that are not subject to conditions, influences, or change. So emptiness is that means that it's lacking. That emptiness means that all things lack this characteristic. So nothing generates itself. Nothing is self-produced. Nothing lasts forever, as it is. So the three Buddhist principles that really are the foundation to the teaching of emptiness are impermanence, dependent arising, and no self. In the Large Sutra on Perfect Wisdom, emptiness is defined as the following, and I'm quoting, "When he thus surveys dependent arising, a bodhisattva certainly does not see anything that is being produced without cause, nor does he review anything that is permanent. He reviews nothing as a self, a being, a soul, a creature." So all things and persons are empty in that they arise in dependence on other things. In terms of impermanence, everything changes, and things and people lack a permanent essence, an independent soul or self. It's important to note that everything is empty. Buddha, enlightenment, attainment, emptiness, the path, everything is empty. So sometimes there's some confusion about emptiness. And just to be clear, emptiness is really about how things exist relationally and impermanently. It is not about whether something exists phenomenal, logically, because they do. In early practice in Mahayana, Buddhism was as specific to emptiness is around non-attachment. So through cultivation, one begins to see and realize that nothing has a fixed self, a fixed nature, that everything is subject to change moment by moment. And over time, as you realize this truth about the nature of reality, what in fact happens is you are breaking down your attachment to self and things. So you can then start to see how things appear, change, and then disappear. Along with this kind of cultivation of non-attachment is the capacity to ask really real questions and also counter questions. In other words, this kind of work we're doing requires that you ask questions about what's going on. The Buddha himself said, do not accept what I have to say on face value. You have to realize it yourself. And how do you do that except inquiry with yourself about what is really the nature of reality? The issue of language was brought up this past week, how language can be a source of confusion for us because we can believe and actually act on the fact that a word is in fact what the object is. In other words, a label. We mistake the label for something real. And that's something that as practitioners, I encourage you to repeatedly test yourself on whether or not you're actually believing the label instead of seeing things as they really are. Because language can either liberate or block not only yourself, but others. So learn to discern what words are words that are maybe in your own vocabulary or in your relationships or ever in the work you do, where you find that you believe the word to be what reality really is instead of what is arising right in front of you. Using skillful means, upaya, particularly with this perfection of wisdom, you can take the needed time to respond appropriately. So skillful means is one of those, actually it's considered a paramita. There are four additional paramitas, just, you know, kind of for your reference. Skillful means is one of those. And it's used as, you know, bodhisattvas, it's kind of in the toolbox. And whenever you need it, you bring it out. And because what it will help you do is when you take that breath and you pause, you will know what is the appropriate response in a given situation. Sometimes you just don't know what to do. And so you just need to just pause and be present in the moment. Allow prajna to come up so you can have an appropriate response. It's once prajna starts working in your life, you can continue to develop and cultivate it by stepping back. Just take those breaths and pause. Breathe in the spaciousness of the moment. Just wait and see what arises. Sometimes you'll be so surprised. It's like you look around and say, oh, that came out of where? Prajna. That source that is available to all of us, that we're connected to, that we just need to activate and allow it to come forth. So I mentioned briefly about practicing the paramitas, in everyday life, and how really anybody can practice them. We would say, that's in the ordinary world or mundane world, or if it's in the perfection or paramita, we could say in how it's being handled is in a mundane way versus a super mundane way. So if it's in the worldly or everyday mind kind of way, we might view it as a typical quest for human achievement, for yourself, for your own excellence, human excellence. But when you go into the other level of it being super mundane, then you're entered into the emptiness of the experience of the object, of the person. In other words, you've seen into the, or realized the true nature of all things. So when you're in that space, there's really no need to plan or scheme or worry about attainment. It's really effortless when prajna comes up. So wisdom shapes our character in myriad ways, and life is always changing moment by moment, and there's a lot of complexity that we must face in our everyday life. And yet, the Bodhisattva recognizes there is fallibility. Wisdom differs from all the other paramitas in that in the other paramitas you can actually, kind of have this tactile touch, so to speak. You can actually see or experience, like when we're talking about generosity, what that's like. We can tell if people are generous or if people are tolerant, and there's some patience going on in a difficult situation, or if people are moral in various ways. But, wisdom, how can you tell? How can you tell? And this makes it so difficult to really speak about it, because wisdom arises independent on the conditions of the individual situation that you're in. No one's going to give you prajna. It's going to be something that comes forth naturally from yourself, through your being. And that makes it much harder, not only to talk about, but also to see in other people. It doesn't have the same tangible, what appears to be tangible indicators. There's so that, you know, not having tangible indicators, you know, moves you into the realm of this not knowing. And this is something in Zen practice we hear frequently, you know, that's in the Zen koans. It's kind of part of our language, not knowing. And it's understandable when we realize that who can grasp? Who can grasp the moment? Everything is changing moment by moment. You just, I mean, how do we know? We don't really know. So having, in a sense, this not knowing that even our ancestor Dogen emphasized through acknowledgement that life is one mistake after another. Well, how is that arise? Because you just don't know. How do you know how do I know what went on in the last 10 minutes with each of you? I know nothing. I was only talking to maybe one out of how many of you in this room, and I don't even know what he was always feeling, even when I was talking with him. So how can I possibly know anything? It's you really don't know. So with all this change, you can see how important it is to actually stop and stop that discriminating mind. Give it a rest for just a moment or less, a nanosecond, and allow really prajna to come up and help you discern what is going on. Because if you give it a chance, you can experience it and it will arise, especially because each of you are practicing Zazen. And in Zazen, this is the foundation of where everything is revealed. So start there. And just continue to commit to do this practice, because this is the journey of a lifetime. Greater wisdom, it's within each of us to realize it. So I have a quote from Suzuki that I'd like to end with, and it goes like this. It's, he says, there is nothing new for us to study. Mm-hmm. But Buddha's teaching will give light by which you can know yourself. The light by which we can see ourselves like a mirror is Buddha's teaching. Thank you.
You pointed out that if you and wait a moment. Mm-hmm. Some wisdom, the prajna might come up. Mm-hmm. Also, some really stupid stuff comes up. So, could that be doorway to prajna?
Not knowing.
Would you like to feel that one? I guess he doesn't want to answer.
Well, what comes to mind is there's a certain, from our base of practice that Val talked about, there's a certain kind of trust or confidence that comes up. And even though we know that sometimes we have to make great effort in this way, we can also trust that the generative energy from all this work creates a kind of spontaneous engagement with all things. So you have a receptivity or a sensitivity to whatever you meet. And then when you meet that thing, without, like Val said, without the label, without preconception, without self, you will spontaneously, appropriately respond. Something like that.
Yes, John.
So, in the way, one thing at a time, you've given us in the last week six tools to work with. So, wondering how do we approach this toolkit? Do we work with one at a time and integrate it? Do we try to do six things at once?
Well, I don't know. I think they have some new studies out on multitasking, even. It doesn't work. single-minded. Good start. But, well, the best place to start, actually, is where you have obstruction. What's bothering you? What's troubling you? Where do you feel that you're not you're having difficulty in your practice? That's the starting point. Wherever that is in any one of the six paramitas or in a hindrance or whatever that is for you, that's the place to begin. Yes, Kim?
I remember something that Norman Fisher once said, which really stuck in my head, which is sort of pertinent, and it was just... wisdom without skillful means isn't worth a hill of beans.
Wonderful, thank you.
You should chant that. Yeah.
Yes, say it again, please.
Wisdom without skillful means isn't worth a hill of beans.
He's got the discriminating mind on beans, huh? Yes, I'm sorry.
I just so appreciated your last line. You know, can you read that again about the mirror?
Oh, okay. So, let's see, he says... I like where he says there's nothing new for us to study after a week of this. Buddha's teaching will give light by which you can know yourself. The light by which we can see ourselves like a mirror is Buddha's teaching.
See, that is so beautiful, and that would make such a beautiful, translated a little bit out of Buddhist terms, but a really beautiful closer of the talks that I do with the girls. You know, because I did this whole media literacy piece, and there's so much imagery, and we're deconstructing stuff, and it's very seductive. At the same time, as you're teaching them to see through the smoke and mirrors of prevalent representation of women, and so that would be a really beautiful ending. You know, like when they look in the mirror, taking that looking to a deeper place, you know, because then it translates into all the other pieces of what go on, you know, in schools and in relationships and relationship itself. Beautiful. Thank you for that inspiration. That's really profound.
Something in my teacher's Dokusan room is simply mirror sees mirror.
Oh. Mirror sees mirror.
I was wondering if you could repeat what you said. The two things that you said, is that a common Buddhist phrase? Are those common Buddhist phrases? One was about receptivity and the other was about engagement? you were elucidating something that Val said.
I forgot. I'm sorry.
Spontaneous engagement?
Yes, spontaneous engagement.
With all things.
And then you further described it as a special kind of receptivity.
Oh, yes, it's talking about the arising of prajna as a natural response.
That's what you... Yeah, so it's like background.
It's a natural response so many times, but when it described that way, it was much faster. See, spontaneous engagement. Spontaneous engagement. I'm not looking at
it. It'll be on tape.
Okay, receptivity.
Mm-hmm.
Because I've been hearing that since your first talk about natural response and. I mean, natural response, you know, that's pretty broad. You know, I look at the way, you know, Bodhi, our cat, responds to the other cat that comes up and threatens it. I mean, there's a lot of natural response going on, you know. But this is something transcendent of our, what I would call our natural responses, you know, maybe lower natural responses.
Yeah, that's very helpful. Thank you. Yes, Todd.
And you've commented before, right, as they'll sink it in exactly where is the difference between intuition and prajna. I think you said intuition is still some form of knowledge or knowing. Or prajna is. So I thought maybe you might expand on that just a little
bit. They're very close. I mean, I'm just trying to recall what an experience of prajna, which would be, it doesn't help.
Prajna, I think prajna is more inclusive, and prajna, I would say prajna can function in an intuitive sense, but...
Prajna is...
Sounds prettier.
I would... Also, prajna is not necessarily spontaneous. Prajna not necessarily... you come from a place of not knowing, or sort of.
Intuition more.
Intuition comes from a place, I would say, of more. There's no pre-thought. There's no discursiveness. There's just kind of a feeling response to something. Wouldn't you say? Is that intuition? Like that.
Yeah,
or it's sudden, yeah, it's very spontaneous or sudden.
Intuition,
yeah. Or you have a... I'm not sure, I mean, we should
get
a dictionary.
Get out the dictionary.
And some other enlightened saints said, in the last, most recent century, you know, the prajna functions through intuition quite a lot. It's through... your reception through feeling, through quietness, through intuition. But as Mike said, prajna is a lot more than that as well, and can function in various other ways as well. But that's what you're, and that's one of the, if you gave a very oversimplified answer, you'd say, yes, they're the same. That's not that simple.
Mm-hmm. Yes, Anna.
So... I was thinking, I'd like to hear. I'm very thankful to be here. Thank you for everybody. So I feel like when I first sat in Sisshin, it was really serious. All right. But then, like, I think because of everybody's energy and it's kind of like starting to loosen up, I started to like play. I just want to play. And then I was thinking about my nephew, my 1-year-old nephew, who I'm just kind of like crawling around. and then he'll like hug animals, like hug everybody. He'll just hug everyone, and then just fall and like, well, what's that? And I'd like to hear your thoughts on prajna and play, or beginner's mind.
Okay. 3 minutes. Prajna and play.
If it doesn't play, it's not prajna.
There's a lightness in being. I think that's associated with prajna. That's why kids walk around in it all the time. They are it.
So I have a question on top of that. If that is true, then why are we so solemn so much of the time?
We're not.
I guess that's your perspective and expectation, right?
This is too coaching. Playground.
Yeah. Okay. Is that what you said? You said it was playful?
That's like a playground.
Yeah. So solemn is a fun play.
It's the prajna playground.
Starting to invent those lyrics after the Hell of Beans, I think.
Certainly an appropriate response could be playful, could always be playful, and I would say that an appropriate response is always complete. Mm-hmm. So when it's time to laugh or when it's time to joyfully respond, then that's the appropriate response. The expression of prajna is it's always appropriate to the situation at hand, and it's always there's a sense of completion or fullness, or what you might call a complete engagement with what it means. So, and it's true, and it's true. So. And your little nephew crawling around and hugging things, as I would say, fits all those categories.